Alyosha opened his mouth, but Vasya was before him. "If I am sent away this winter, you will all die." Anna drew in a gasping breath. "How dare you threaten us?"
"I do not threaten," said Vasya desperately. "It is the truth."
"Truth? Truth? You little liar, there is no truth in you." "I will not go," said Vasya, and so fierce was her voice that even the crackling fire seemed to waver. "Will you not?" said Anna. Her eyes were wild, but something in her bearing reminded Vasya that her father was a grand prince.
"Very well, Vasilisa Petrovna. I will give you a choice."
Her eyes darted around the room and fastened on the white flowers adorning Irina's kerchief.
"My daughter, my true, fair, and obedient daughter, is weary in all this snow for the sight of green things.
You, ugly witch of a girl, will do her a service. Go out into the woods and bring her back a basket of snowdrops. If you do, you will be free to do as you like hereafter."
Irina gaped. Constantine had his mouth open in alarmed protest. Vasya stared blankly at her stepmother.
"Anna Ivanovna, it is midwinter."
"Go," screeched Anna, laughing wildly. "Out of my sight. Bring me flowers or go to the convent. Now get you gone."
Vasya looked from face to face. Anna triumphant, Irina frightened, Alyosha furious, Constantine inscrutable. The walls seemed to shrink again. The fire burned up all the air, so that no matter how her lungs heaved, she could not draw breath. Terror overtook her, the terror of the wild thing in the trap. She turned and ran from the kitchen. Alyosha caught her at the outer door. She had yanked on her boots and mittens, wrapped a cloak about her and a shawl about her head. He seized her with both hands, turned her around.
"Have you gone mad, Vasya?"
"Let me go. You heard Anna Ivanovna. I'd rather take my chances in the forest than be locked up forever."
She was shaking, wild-eyed. "All that is nonsense. Wait for father to return."
"Father has agreed to it."
Vasya swallowed back the tears, but still they crept down her cheeks.
"Anna would not have dared otherwise. People say our misfortunes are my fault. Do you think I have not heard? I will be stoned as a witch if I stay. Perhaps father is trying to protect me, but I'd rather die in the forest than in a convent."
Her voice broke. "I will never be a nun. Do you hear me? Never!" She yanked away from him, but Alyosha held her tightly.
"I will guard you until father returns. I will make him see sense."
"You cannot protect me if every man of the village turns on us. Do you think I have not heard their whispers, brother?"
"So you mean to go into the woods and die?" snapped Alyosha. "A noble sacrifice? How will that help anyone?"
"I have helped all I can and earned the people's hatred," retorted Vasya. "If this is the last decision I can ever make, at least it is my decision. Let me go, Alyosha. I am not afraid." "But I am, you stupid girl. Do you think I want to lose you to this folly? I won't let you go."
Surely he would leave finger marks on her shoulders where he held her.
"You as well, brother?" said Vasya furiously. "Am I a child? Always someone else must decide for me. But this, I will decide for myself."
"If Father Okolya went mad, I wouldn't let him decide things for himself either." "Let me go, Alyosha."
He shook his head. Her voice softened.
"Perhaps there is magic in the forest, enough for me to defy Anna Ivanovna. Did you think of that?"
Alyosha laughed shortly. "You are too old for fairy tales."
"Am I?"
said Vasya. She smiled at him, though her lips trembled. Alyosha remembered suddenly all the times her eyes had moved, following things that he could not see. His arms fell away. They looked at each other.
"Vasya, promise me I will see you again."
"Give bread to the domovoy," said Vasya. "Watch by the oven at night. Courage might save you. I have done what I can. Farewell, brother. I will try to come back."
"Vasya!"
but she had slipped out the kitchen door. Father Constantine was waiting for her beside the door of the church.
Are you mad, Vasilisa Petrovna?
Her green eyes flew up to his, mocking now. The tears had dried. She was cold and steady.
But, Batyushka, I must obey my stepmother.
Then go take your vows. Vasya laughed.
She will see me gone, dead or vowed. She doesn't care.
Well, I will please myself and her as well.
Forget your mad folly. You will be vowed. It will be as God wills, and he has willed it so.
Has he? Said Vasya.
And you are the voice of God, I presume?
Well, I was given a choice, and I am taking it. She turned toward the wood.
You are not, said Constantine,
and something in his voice had Vasya spinning round. Two men stepped out of the shadows.
Put her in the church tonight and bind her hands, said Constantine,
never taking his eyes from Vasya.
She will leave at dawn.
Vasya was already running, but she had only 3 strides head start, and they were very strong. One of them reached out, and his hand snagged on the hem of her cloak. She tripped and sprawled, rolling, striking out, panicked. The man flung himself on her, held her down. The snow was cold on her neck. She felt the scrape of icy rope on her wrists. She forced herself to go limp, as though she had fainted in her fright. The man was more used to tying dead beasts for carrying. His grip relaxed while he fumbled with the rope. Vasya heard the footsteps as the priest and the other man approached. Then she flung herself up, shrieking a wordless cry, jabbing her fingers at her captor's eyes. He recoiled, she wrenched sideways, rolled to her feet, and ran as she had never run in her life. Behind her she heard shouts, panting, footsteps, but she would not be caught again. Never. She ran on and did not stop, until she was swallowed by the shadow of the trees. The clear night lit the snow, which lay firm underfoot. Vasya ran into the woods, bruised and panting. Her loosened cloak flapped about her. She heard shouting from the village. Her tracks showed clear in the virgin snow, so that her only hope was speed. She darted headlong from shadow to shadow, until the shouting grew fainter, and at last died away.
They dared not follow, thought Vasya. They feared the forest after dark. And then, darkly, they are wise.
Her breathing slowed. She walked deeper into the wood, pushing loss and fear into the back of her mind. She listened. She called aloud. But all was still. The Leshy did not answer. The Rusalka slept, dreaming of summertime. The wind did not stir the trees. Time passed. She was not sure how much. The wood thickened and blotted out the stars. The moon rose higher and cast shadows. Then the clouds came and threw the forest into darkness. Vasya walked until she began to grow sleepy, and then the terror of sleep forced her awake again. She turned north and east, and south again. The night drew on, and Vasya shivered as she walked. Her teeth clacked together. Her toes grew numb despite her heavy boots. A small part of her had thought, hoped, that there would be some help in the woods, some destiny, some magic. She had hoped the firebird would come, or the horse with a golden mane, or the raven who was really a prince.
Foolish girl to believe in fairy tales.
The winter wood was indifferent to men and women. The Cherti slept in winter, and there was no such thing as a raven prince.
Well, die then. It is better than a convent.
But Vasya could not quite believe it. She was young. Her blood ran hot. She could not bring herself to lie down in the snow. On she stumbled, but she was growing weaker. She feared her flagging strength. She feared her stiffening hands, her cold lips. In the blackest part of the night, Vasya stopped and looked back. Anna, Ivanovna would mock her if she returned. She would be bound like a hart, locked in a church and sent to a convent, but she did not want to die, and she was very cold. Then Vasya took in the trees on either side and realized that she did not know where she was. No matter. She could follow her own trail back the way she had come. She looked behind again. Her tracks were gone. Vasya quelled a surge of panic. She was not lost. She could not be lost. She turned north. Her weary feet crunched dully in the snow. Once more, the ground began to look inviting. Surely she could lie down. Just for a moment. A dark shape loomed before her, a tree, all twisted, bigger than any tree Vasya knew. Memory stirred, breaking through her fog. She remembered a lost child, a great oak, a sleeper with one eye. She remembered an old nightmare. The tree filled her sight. Go nearer? Run away? She was too cold to turn back. Then she heard the sound of weeping. Vasya halted, scarcely breathing. When she stopped, the sound stopped as well. But when she moved again, the sound followed her. The sickly moon came out and made strange patterns on the snow. There, a white flicker, between two trees. Vasya walked faster, clumsy on her numb feet. There was no house to run back to, no Vasila to offer her strength. Her courage flickered like a guttering candle. The tree seemed to fill the world. Come here, breathed a soft, snarling voice. Closer. Crunch. Behind her, a step that was not hers. Vasya spun. Nothing. But when she walked, the other feet kept pace. She was 20 paces from the twisted oak. The footsteps drew nearer. It grew difficult to think. The tree seemed to fill the world. Closer. Like a child in a nightmare, Vasya did not dare look back. The feet behind broke into a run, and there came a shrill, desiccated scream. Vasya ran as well, spending her last strength. A ragged figure appeared before her, standing beneath the tree, a hand outstretched. Its single eye gleamed with greedy triumph. I have found you first. Then Vasya heard a new sound, the smack of galloping hooves. The figure by the tree cried to her furiously, Faster! The tree was before her, the wheezing creature behind, but to her left, a white mare came galloping, swift as fire. Blind, terrified, Vasya turned toward the horse. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the upir lunge, teeth shining in the old, dead face. In that instant, the white mare came up alongside. The horse's rider reached out a hand. Vasya seized it and was flung bodily across the mare's withers. The upir landed in the snow where she'd been. The horse tore away. Behind them came twin cries, one of pain and one of fury. The mare's rider did not speak. Vasya, panting, had only a moment to be grateful for the reprieve. She hung head down over the mare's withers, and so they rode. The girl felt as though her guts would come through her skin with each strike of the mare's hooves, yet on and on they galloped. She couldn't feel her face or her feet. The strong hand that had seized her out of the snow held her still. The rider did not speak. The mare smelled unlike any horse Vasya had ever known, like strange flowers and warm stone, incongruous in the bitter night. They ran until Vasya could not stand the pain or the cold anymore. Please, she gasped. Please. Abruptly, bone-jarringly, they came to a halt. Vasya slid backward off the horse and fell, doubled over in the snow, numb, retching, clinging to her bruised ribs. The mare stood still. Vasya did not hear the mare's rider dismount, but suddenly he was standing in the snow. Vasya stumbled upright on feet she could no longer feel. Her head was bare to the night. It was snowing. The snowflakes tangled in her braid. She had gone beyond shivering. She felt heavy and dull. The man looked down at her, and she up at him. His eyes were pale as water or winter ice. "Please," whispered Vasya, "I am cold."
"Everything is cold here," he replied. "Where am I?"
He shrugged.
"Back of the north wind, the end of the world. Nowhere at all."
Vasya swayed suddenly and would have fallen, but the man caught her.
"Tell me your name, Yevushka."
His voice raised strange echoes in the wood around them. Vasya shook her head. His flesh was icy. She pulled away, stumbling.
"Who are you?"
The snowflakes caught in his dark curls. His head was bare as hers. He smiled and said nothing.
"I have seen you before," she said. "I come with the snow," he said. "I come when men are dying."
She knew him. She had known him the instant his hand seized hers.
"Am I dying?"
"Perhaps." He put a cold hand beneath her jaw. Vasya felt her heart throbbing against his fingers. Then all at once, pain struck. Her breath came short. She sank to her knees. Shards of crystal seemed to form in her blood. He knelt with her.
"Karachun," Vasya thought. "Morosko, the frost demon. Death. This is death. They will find me frozen in the snow like the girl in the story."
She took a breath and felt that the frost had spread to her lungs.
"Let go," she whispered.
Her lips and tongue were too cold to obey.
"You would not have saved me at the tree if you meant to kill me."
The demon's hand dropped. She fell back into the snow, gasping, doubled over. He got to his feet.
"Would I not, fool?" he said, his voice thin with anger. "What madness brought you into the forest tonight?"
Vasya forced herself to stand. "I am not here by choice." The white mare came up behind her, blew warm breath on her cheek. Vasya buried her cold fingers in the long mane.
"My stepmother was going to send me to a convent."
His voice was alive with scorn.
"And so you ran? Easier to escape a convent than the bear."
Vasya met his eyes.
"I did not run. Well, I did run, but only..."
She could manage no more. She clung to the horse at the end of her strength. Her head swam. The horse curved her neck around. The smell of stone and flowers revived Vasya a little. She straightened and firmed her lips. The frost demon came nearer. Vasya put out one hand instinctively to keep him back, but he caught her mittened hand in both of his.
"Come then," he said. "Look at me."
He pulled the mitten away and set his palm to hers. Her whole body tensed, dreading the pain, but it did not come. His hand was hard and cool as river ice. It was even gentle against her frozen fingers.
"Tell me who you are."
His voice sent a shiver of bitter air across her face.
I'm Vasilisa Petrovna," she said.
His eyes seemed to bore into her skull. She bit her tongue and did not look away.
"Well met, then," said the demon.
He let go and stepped back. His blue eyes threw sparks. Vasya thought she had imagined the look of triumph on his face.
"Now tell me again, Vasilisa Petrovna," he added, half-mockingly. "What are you doing wandering the Black Forest? This is my hour and mine alone."
"I was to be sent to the convent at dawn," said Vasya. "But my stepmother said I needn't go if I brought her the white flowers of spring, the podsnezhniki." The frost demon stared, and then he laughed. Vasya gazed at him in astonishment, then continued. "The men tried to stop me, but I got away. I ran into the forest. I was so frightened I couldn't think. I meant to turn back, but I got lost. I saw the twisted oak tree, and then I heard footsteps.
Folly, the frost demon said dryly. I am not the only power in these woods. You should not have left your hearth.
I had to, Basia rejoined. Blackness darted suddenly before her eyes. Her brief flare of strength was fading fast. They were going to send me to a convent. I decided I would rather freeze in the snowbank. Her skin shivered all over.
Well, that was before I began to freeze in the snowbank. It hurts.
Yes, said Morozko. Yes, it does.
The dead are walking, Vasya whispered. The Domovoy will disappear if I am gone. My family will die if they send me away. I don't know what to do.
The frost demon said nothing. I must go home now, Vasya managed, but I do not know where it is.
The white mare stamped and shook her mane. Vasya's legs suddenly buckled, as though she were a newborn foal.
East of the sun, west of the moon, said Morozko, beyond the next tree.
Vasya did not answer. Her eyelids fluttered closed.
Come then, Morozko added. It is cold.
He caught Vasya as she was falling. Beside them stood a grove of old firs with interlaced branches. He picked the girl up. Her head and hand hung limp. Her heart stirred feebly.
That was a near-run thing, said the mare to her rider, blowing a cloud of steaming breath into the girl's face.
Yes, replied Morozko. She is stronger than I dared hope. Another would have died.
The mare snorted. You did not need to test her. The bear has done that already. Another instant, and he'd have had her first.
Well, he did not, and we must be grateful.
Will you tell her? Asked the mare.
Everything, the demon said. Of bears and sorcerers, spells made of sapphire, and a witch that lost her daughter? No, of course not. I shall tell her as little as possible, and hope that it is enough.
The mare shook her mane and her ears eased back, but the frost demon did not see. He strode into the fir trees, the girl in his arms. The mare sighed out a breath and followed. Part 3 Chapter 23 The House That Was Not There. Some hours later, Vasya opened her eyes to find herself lying in the loveliest bed anyone had ever dreamed of. The coverlets were white wool, heavy and soft as snow. Pale blues and yellows drifted through the weave, like a sunny day in January. The bed frame and posts were carved to look like the trunks of living trees, and over it hung a great canopy of branches. Vasya struggled to get her bearings. The last thing she remembered. Flowers. She had been looking for flowers. Why? It was December. But she had to get flowers. Gasping, Vasya heaved herself upright, floundering in the drifts of blanket. She saw the room and fell back, shuddering.
The room? Well, if the bed was magnificent, the room was simply strange.
At first, Vasya thought she was lying in a grove of great trees. High above hung a vault of pale sky. But the next moment, she seemed to be indoors, in a wooden house whose ceiling was painted a thin sky blue. But she had no idea which was real, and trying to decide made her dizzy. At last, Vasya buried her face in a blanket and decided she would go back to sleep. Surely she'd wake up at home, with Dunya by her side asking if she'd had a nightmare. No, that was wrong. Dunya was dead. Dunya was wandering the woods wrapped in the cloth they'd buried her in. Vasya's brain whirled, but she couldn't remember. And then she did. The men, the priest, the convent. The snow, the frost demon, his fingers on her throat, the cold. A white horse. He had meant to kill her. He'd saved her life. She struggled again to sit up, but only managed to kneel among the blankets. She squinted desperately, but failed to make the room stay still. Finally, she shut her eyes and discovered the edge of the bed by tumbling over it. Her shoulder struck the floor. She thought she felt a brush of wetness, as though she had fallen into a snowdrift. No. Now the ground was smooth and warm, like well-planed wood near a hearth. She thought she heard a fire crackling. She stood up unsteadily. Someone had taken off her boots and stockings. She had frozen her feet. She saw her toes white and bloodless. She could not look at anything in the house. It was a room. It was a fir grove under the open sky, and she could not decide which was which. She shut her eyes tight, stumbling on her injured feet. "What do you see?" said a clear, strange voice. Vasya turned toward the voice, not daring to open her eyes. "A house," she croaked. "A fir grove. Both together." "Very well," said the voice. "Open your eyes." Flinching, Vasya did so. The cold man, the frost demon, stood in the center of the room, and at least she could look at him. His dark, unruly hair hung to his shoulders. The sardonic face might have belonged to a youth of 20 or a warrior of 50. Unlike every other man Vasya had ever seen, he was clean-shaven. Perhaps that was what gave his face the odd note of youthfulness. Certainly his eyes were old. When she looked into them, she thought, "I did not know anything could be that old and live." The thought made her afraid. But stronger than fear was her resolve. "Please," she said, "I must go home." His pale stare swept her up and down. "They cast you out," he said. "They will send you to a convent. And yet you will go home?" She bit down hard on her lip. "The Domovoy will disappear if I am not there. Perhaps my father has returned by now, and I can make him understand." The frost demon studied her a moment. "Perhaps," he said at length, "but you are wounded. You are weary. Your presence will do the Domovoy little good." "I must try. My family is in danger. How long was I asleep?" He shook his head. A faint dry humor curled his mouth. "Here there is only today, no yesterday, and no tomorrow. You may stay a year and be home just after you left. It does not matter how long you slept." Vasya was silent, absorbing this. At last she said, in a lower voice, "Where am I?" The night in the snow had blurred in her memory, but she thought she remembered indifference in his face, a hint of malice and a hint of sorrow. Now he looked only amused. "My house," he said, "as far as I have one."
"That is not helpful." Vasya bit back the words before they could escape, but they must have shown on her face. "I fear," he added gravely, though there was a glint in his eye, "that you are gifted, or cursed, with what your folk might call the second sight. My house is a fir grove, and this fir grove is my house, and you see both at once." "And what do I do about that?" Vasya hissed between clenched teeth, quite unable to strive for politeness. In another moment, she would be sick on the floor at his feet. "Look at me," he said. His voice compelled her. It seemed to echo in her skull. "Look only at me." She raised her eyes to his. "You are in my house. Believe it is so." Hesitantly, Vasya repeated this to herself. The walls seemed to solidify as she looked. She was in a rough, roomy dwelling with worn carvings on its cross trees and a ceiling the color of the noon sky. A large oven at one end of the room radiated heat. The walls were hung with woven pictures. Wolves in the snow, a hibernating bear, a dark-haired warrior driving a sledge. She tore her eyes away. "Why did you bring me here?" "My horse insisted." You mock me.
Do I?
You had been wandering in the forest too long. Your feet and hands are frozen. Perhaps you should be honored. I don't often have guests.
I am honored then, said Vasya. She could not think of anything else to say.
He studied her a moment more.
Are you hungry?
Vasya heard the hesitation in his voice.
Did your horse suggest that as well?
She asked, before she could stop herself. The man laughed, and she thought he looked a little surprised.
Yes, of course. She has had any number of foals. I yield to her judgment.
Suddenly he tilted his head. The blue eyes burned. My servants will tend to you, he added abruptly. I must be gone a while. There was nothing human in his face, and for a moment, Vasya could not see the man at all, and instead saw only a wind lashing the limbs of ancient trees, howling in triumph as it rose. She blinked away the vision.
Farewell, said the frost demon, and was gone.
Vasya, taken aback by his departure, glanced cautiously about. The tapestries drew her, vividly alive. The wolves and man and horses looked ready to leap to the floor in a swirl of cold air. She walked the room, examining them as she went. Eventually, she fetched up in front of the oven and stretched out her frozen fingers. The scrape of a hoof sent her whirling round. The white mare came toward her, bare of any harness. Her long mane foamed like a spring cascade. She seemed to have emerged from a door in the opposite wall, but it was closed. Vasya stared. The mare tossed her head. Vasya remembered her manners and bowed.
I thank you, lady. You saved my life.
The mare twitched an ear. It was little enough.
Not to me, said Vasya, with a hint of asperity. I did not mean that, said the mare. I meant that you are a creature as we are, formed raw from the powers of the world. You would have saved yourself. You are not formed for convents, nor yet to live as the bear's creature.
Would I have? Said Vasya, remembering the running, the terror, the footsteps in the dark.
I wasn't doing too well at it. But what do you mean, the powers of the world? We were all made by God.
I suppose this God taught you our speech?
Of course not, said Vasya. That was the Vasila. I made him offerings.
The mare scraped a hoof against the floor.
I remember more, and see more than you, she said, and will for a considerable time. We do not speak to many, and the spirit of horses does not reveal himself to anyone. There is magic in your bones. You must reckon with it.
Am I damned then? Vasya whispered, frightened.
I do not understand damned. You are. And because you are, you can walk where you will, into peace, oblivion, or pits of fire. But you will always choose.
There was a pause. Vasya's face hurt, and her sight had begun to fracture. The snowy countryside tugged at the edges of her vision.
There is mead on the table, the mare said, seeing the girl's drooping shoulders. You should drink, then rest again. There will be food when you awaken.
Vasya had not eaten since supper time, before she'd ventured into the forest. Her stomach took a moment, forcefully, to remind her. A wooden table stood on the other side of the oven, dark with age, rich with carving. The silver flagon upon it was garlanded with silver flowers. The cup was of hammered silver, studded with fire-red gems. For a moment, the girl forgot her hunger. She lifted the cup and tilted it in the light. It was beautiful. She looked a question at the mare.
He likes objects, she said, though I do not understand why. And he is a great giver of gifts.
The flagon indeed contained mead, thin and strong, and somehow piercing, like winter sunshine. Drinking it, Vasya felt suddenly sleepy. Heavy-eyed, it was all she could do to put down the silver cup. She bowed in silence to the white mare and stumbled back to the great bed. All that day, a storm tore across the frozen lands of northern Rus. The country folk ran inside and barred their doors. Even the oven fires in Dmitri's wooden palace in Moscow danced and guttered. The old and the sick knew their time had come and slipped away on the crying wind. The living crossed themselves when they felt the shadow pass. But at nightfall, the air quieted, and the sky filled with a promise of snow. Those who had resisted the summons smiled, for they knew that they would live. A man with dark hair emerged from between two trees and raised his face to a cloud-torn sky. His eyes glowed an unearthly blue as he scanned the mounting shadows. His robe was of fur and midnight brocade, though he had come to the twilit borderlands where winter yielded to the promise of spring. The ground was thick with snowdrops. A song pierced the newborn night, thin and soft and sweet. Even as he turned toward it, Morozko tasted the darker side of the magic he had set in motion, for the music reminded him of sorrow, of slow hours heavy with regret. This sorrow he had not felt, had not been able to feel, for 1,000 years. He walked on regardless until he came to the tree where a nightingale sang in the dark. "Little one, will you come back with me?" he said. The tiny creature hopped to a lower branch and cocked its dull brown head. "To live as your brothers and sisters have lived," said Morozko. "I have a companion for you." The bird trilled, but softly. "You will not come into your strength otherwise, and this one is generous and high-hearted. The old woman cannot gainsay it." The bird cheeped and raised its brown wings. "Yes, there is death in it, but not before joy or glory. Will you stay here instead and sing away eternity?" The bird hesitated, then leaped from its branch with a cry. Morozko watched it go. "Follow then," he said softly, as the wind rose again around him. Vasya was still asleep when the frost demon returned. The mare was dozing near the oven. "What think you?" he asked the horse, low-voiced. The mare was about to reply, but a neigh and a clatter cut her off. A bay stallion with a star between his eyes burst into the room. He snorted and stamped, shaking snow off his black, dappled quarters. The mare laid her ears back. "I think," she said, "that my son has come where he should not." The stallion, though graceful as a stag, had yet a trace of long-legged colt about him. He eyed his mother warily. "I heard there was a champion here," he said. The mare switched her tail. "Who told you that?" "I did," said Morozko. "I brought him back with me." The mare stared at her rider with pricked ears and trembling nostrils. "You brought him for her?" "I need that girl," said Morozko, giving the mare a hard look. "As well you know. If she is foolish enough to roam the bear's forest at night, then she will need a companion." He might have said more, but he was interrupted by a clatter. Vasya had awakened and tumbled out of bed, unused to bedding that was also a snowdrift. The big horse, his dark bay coat glowing black in the firelight, minced over, ears pricked. Vasya, still only half awake and rubbing a very sore shoulder, looked up to find herself nose to nose with a huge young stallion. She held still. "Hello," she said. The horse was pleased. "Hello," he answered. "You will ride me." Vasya clambered to her feet, much less thick-headed than at her last waking. But her cheek throbbed, and she had to marshal her tired eyes in order to see only the stallion, not the shadows like feathers that fluttered around him. Once her vision settled, She eyed his back, two hands above her head, with some skepticism.
I would be honored to ride you, she answered politely, though Morosco heard the dry note in the girl's voice and bit his lip. But perhaps I may defer it a moment. I should like some more clothes.
She glanced around the room, but her cloak, boots, or mittens were nowhere to be seen. She wore nothing but her crumpled underdress, with Dunya's pendant lying cold against her breastbone. Her braid had raveled while she slept, and the thick red-black curtain of her hair tumbled loose to her waist. She brushed it from her face and, with a touch of bravado, made her way to the fire. The white mare stood beside the oven with a frost demon at her head. Vasya was struck by the similarity in their expressions, the man's eyes hooded and the mare's ears pricked. The bay stallion huffed warm breath into her hair. He was following so close that his nose bumped her shoulder. Without thinking, Vasya laid a hand on his neck. The horse's ears made a pleased little swivel, and she smiled. There was plenty of space in front of the fire, despite the incongruous presence of two tall and well-built horses. Vasya frowned. The room had not seemed as large as that when she woke last. The table was laid with two silver cups and a slender ewer. The scent of warm honey floated through the room. A loaf of black bread, smelling of rye and anise, lay beside a platter of fresh herbs. On one side stood a bowl of pears, and on the other, a bowl of apples. Beyond them all lay a basket of white flowers with modestly drooping heads. Podsnezhniki, snowdrops. Vasya stopped and stared.
It is what you came for, is it not? Morosko said.
I didn't think I'd actually find any.
You are fortunate, then, to have done so.
Vasya looked at the flowers and said nothing.
Come and eat, Morosko said. We will talk later.
Vasya opened her mouth to argue, but her empty stomach roared. She bit back curiosity and sat down. He sat on a stool across from her, leaning against the mare's shoulder. She surveyed the food, and his lips twitched at her expression.
It's not poison.
I suppose not, said Vasya, dubious.
He twisted off a lump of bread and handed it to Solovey. The stallion seized it with enthusiasm.
Come, said Morosko, or your horse will eat it all.
Cautiously, Vasya picked up an apple and bit down. Icy sweetness dazzled her tongue. She reached for the bread. Before she knew it, her bowl was empty, half the loaf was gone, and she sat replete, feeding bits of bread and fruit to the two horses. Morosko touched no food. After she had eaten, he poured the mead. Vasya drank from her silver-chased cup, savoring the taste of cold sunshine and winter flowers. His cup was twin to hers, except that the stones along the rim were blue. Vasya did not speak while she drank, but at last she set her cup on the table and raised her eyes to his.
What happens now? She asked him. That depends on you, Vasilisa Petrovna. I must go home, she said. My family is in danger. You are wounded, replied Morosko, worse than you know. You will stay until you are healed. Your family will be none the worse for it. More gently, he added, you will go home at dawn of the night you left. I can promise it.
Vasya said nothing. It was a measure of her weariness that she did not argue. She looked again at the snowdrops.
Why did you bring me these?
Your choices were to bring your stepmother those flowers or to go to a convent.
Vasya nodded.
Well then, there you have them. You may do as you will.
Vasya reached out a hesitant forefinger to stroke one silky damp petal.
Where did they come from?
The edge of my lands.
And where is that?
At the thaw. But that is not a place.
Is it not?
It is many things. Just as you and I are many things,
and my house is many things, and even that horse with his nose in your lap is many things. Your flowers are here. Be content. The green eyes flared up to his again, mutinous instead of tentative. I do not like half answers. Stop asking half questions then, he said, and smiled with sudden charm. She flushed. The stallion thrust his great head closer. She winced when the horse lipped her injured fingers.
Ah, Morozko said, I forgot. Does it hurt?
Only a little. But she would not meet his eyes. He made his way around the table and knelt so their faces were on a level.
May I?
She swallowed. He took her chin in one hand and turned her face to the firelight. There were black marks on her cheek where he had touched her in the forest. The tips of her fingers and toes were white. He examined her hands, drew a fingertip along her frozen foot.
Don't move, he said.
Why would... But then he laid his palm flat against her jaw. His fingers were suddenly hot, impossibly hot, so that she expected to smell her own flesh scorching. She tried to pull away, but his other hand came up behind her head, digging into her hair, holding her. Her breath trembled and rasped in her throat. His hand slid down to her throat, and if anything, the burning grew. She was too shocked to scream. Just when she thought she could not endure it another instant, he let go. She slumped against the bay stallion. The horse blew comfortingly into her hair.
Forgive me, Morozko said.
The air around him was cold despite the heat in his hands. Vasya realized she was shivering. She touched her damaged skin. It was smooth and warm, unmarked.
It doesn't hurt anymore.
She forced her voice to calm.
No, he said. Some things I can heal, but I cannot heal gently.
She looked down at her toes, at her ruined fingertips.
Better than being crippled, as you say.
But when he touched her feet, she could not keep the tears from her eyes.
Will you give me your hands? He said.
She hesitated. Her fingertips were frostbitten, and one hand was crudely wrapped in a length of linen to shield the ragged hole in the palm from the night the upir had come for Konstantin. The memory of pain thundered at her. He did not wait for her to speak. It took all her strength, but she swallowed back her cry while the flesh of her fingertips grew warm and pink. Last, he took up her left hand and began to unwind the linen.
It was you who hurt me, said Vasya, trying to distract herself. The night the upir came. I did.
Why?
So that you would see me, he said. So that you would remember.
I had seen you before. I had not forgotten. His head was bent over his work, but she saw the curve of his mouth. Wry and a little bitter.
But you doubted. You would not have believed your own senses after I had gone.
I am little more than a shadow now, in the houses of men.
Once I was a guest. Who is the one-eyed man? My brother, he said shortly. My enemy. But that is a long tale, and not for tonight.
He laid the linen bandage aside. Vasya fought the urge to curl her hand into a fist.
This will be harder to heal than frostbite. I kept reopening it, Vasya said. It seemed to help ward the house. It would, said Morozko. There is virtue in your blood.
He touched the wounded place. Vasya flinched.
But only a little, for you are young.
Vasya, I can heal this. But you will carry the mark.
Do it then, she said, failing to keep the tremor out of her voice. Very well.
He reached to the floor and scooped up a handful of snow. Vasya was for a moment disoriented. She saw the fir grove, the snow on the ground, blue with dusk, red with firelight. But then the house reformed around her, and Morosko pressed the snow into the wound on her palm. Her whole body went rigid, and then the pain came, worse than before. She bit back a scream and managed to keep still. The pain rose past bearing, so that she sobbed once before she could stop herself. Abruptly, it died away. He let go her hand, and she almost fell off her stool. The bay stallion saved her. She fell against his warm bulk and caught herself by seizing his mane. The stallion put his head around to lip at her trembling hand. Vasya pushed him aside and looked. The wound was gone. There was only a cold, pale mark, perfectly round in the middle of her palm. When she turned it in the firelight, it seemed to catch the light, as though a sliver of ice was buried under the skin. No, she was imagining things. Thank you. She pressed both hands into her lap to hide their trembling. Morosko stood and drew away, looking down at her. You'll heal, he said. Rest. You are my guest. As for your questions, there will be answers. In time. Vasya nodded, staring still at her hand. When she looked up again, he had disappeared. Chapter 24. I have seen your heart's desire.
Find her, Konstantin snapped. Bring her back.
But the men would not go into the forest. They followed Vasya to the brink and balked, muttering of wolves and demons, of the bitter cold.
God will judge her now, Batyushka, said Timofey's father,
and Oleg nodded in agreement. Konstantin hesitated, caught. The darkness beneath the trees seemed absolute.
As you say, my children, he said heavily, God will judge her. God be with you.
He made the sign of the cross. The men tramped away through the village, muttering with their heads together. Konstantin went to his cold, bare cell. His dinner porridge lay heavy in his stomach. He lit a candle before the Mother of God, and 100 shadows sprang furiously to life along the walls.
Wicked servant, snarled the voice. Why is the witch girl free in the forest, when I told you she must be contained? That she must go to a convent. I am displeased, my servant. I am most displeased.
Konstantin fell to his knees, cowering.
We tried our best, he pleaded. She is a demon. That demon is with my brother, and if he has the wit to see her strength.
The candle guttered. The priest, huddled on the floor, went very still.
Your brother?
Konstantin whispered.
But you...
Then the candle went out, and there was only the breathing darkness.
Who are you?
A long, slow silence. And then the voice laughed. Konstantin wasn't sure he heard it. He might only have seen it in the quiver of the shadows on the wall.
The bringer of storms, murmured the voice with a certain satisfaction. For once you so summoned me, but long ago men called me the bear, Medved. You are a devil, whispered Konstantin, clenching his hands.
All the shadows laughed.
As you like. But what difference is there between me and the one you call God? I too revel in deeds done in my name. I can give you glory if you will do my bidding.
You, whispered Konstantin. But I thought... He had thought himself exalted, set apart. But he was only a poor dupe, and he had done a demon's bidding.
Vasya,
his throat closed. Somewhere in his soul... There was a proud girl riding a horse in the summer daylight,
laughing with her brother on her stool by the oven. She will die. He pressed his fists to his eyes.
I did it in your service.
Even as he spoke, he was thinking, they must never know.
She ought to have gone to a convent, or come to me, said the voice matter-of-factly, with just a faint, seething undercurrent of anger. But now she is with my brother, with death, but not dead.
With death? Whispered Constantine. Not dead?
He wanted her to be dead. He wanted her alive. He wished he were dead himself. He would go mad if the voice kept speaking.
The silence stretched out, and when he could not stand it any more, the voice came again.
What do you want above all, Constantine Nikonovich?
Nothing, Constantine said.
I want nothing. Go away.
You are like a maid with the vapors, said the voice sourly, and then it softened.
No matter. I know what you want.
And then, laughing,
would you have your soul cleansed, man of God? Would you have the innocent girl back? Well, know that I can take her from the hands of death himself.
Better she die and leave this world, croaked Constantine.
She will live in torment before she dies. I can save her. I alone.
Prove it then, said Constantine. Bring her back. The shadow snorted.
So hasty, man of God.
What do you want? Constantine choked on the words. The shadow's voice ripened.
Oh, Constantine Nikonovich, it is such a fine thing. When the children of men ask me what I want.
Then what is it? Snapped Constantine.
How can I be righteous with that voice in my ears? If he brings her back, I will be clean again.
A little thing, said the voice. Only a little thing. Life must pay for life.
You want the little witch returned? I must have a witch for myself. Bring me one. And I give you yours, and then I will leave you.
What do you mean?
Bring a witch to the forest, to the border, to the oak tree at dawn. You will know the place when you see it.
And what will happen, said Constantine, little more than a breath, to this witch that I bring you?
Well, she will not die, said the voice and laughed. What good is a death to me? Death is my brother whom I hate.
But there are no witches save Vasya.
Witches must see, man of God.
Is it only the little maiden who sees?
Constantine was silent. In his mind's eye, he saw a plump, shapeless figure kneeling at the foot of the icon screen, seizing his hand in her moist one. Her voice sounded in his ears.
Batyushka, I see demons everywhere, all the time.
Think on it, Konstantin Nikonovich, said the voice. But I must have her before sunrise.
And how will I find you?
The words were softer than snowfall. A mortal man would not have heard them, but the shadow heard.
Go into the woods, hissed the shadow. Look for snowdrops, then you will know. Give me a witch and take yours. Give me a witch and be free.
Chapter 25 The Bird That Loved a Maiden. Vasya awoke to the touch of sunlight on her face. She opened her eyes on a ceiling of thin blue. No. On a vault of open sky. Her senses blurred, and she could not remember. Then she did.
I am in the house in the fir grove.
A whiskery chin bumped hers. She opened her eyes and found once again that she was nose to nose with a bay stallion.
You sleep too much, said the horse.
I thought you were a dream, said Vasya in some wonder.
She had forgotten how big the dream horse was and the fiery look in his dark eyes. She pushed his nose away and sat up.
"I am not usually," replied the horse.